The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, Power Athlete Nation, I have a chilly one for you today. We have Mr. Wyatt Ewing on the podcast, owner, CEO, and really visionary behind Ice Barrel. So those of you guys don't know, ice barrels are barrels that are full of cold water, and people do cold water immersion in them. One of the problems I've always had with ice, and especially this, has to do more with the way that they're done in terms of getting into a bathtub. I always thought it was weird to lay down in cold water. What I liked about his technology, it's a barrel that you effectively get into and squat, which is more similar to like what you'd see in a river or what I do when it's cold here in Texas in my own pool. So I really enjoyed having him on, not only for his technology and the cold water immersion, but also for the entrepreneur story. I mean, what he's done in terms of, you know, moving to the middle of nowhere, you know, bringing his wife and, you know, pregnant wife and kids into it and really building this company up, not taking any outside funding, but really having the vision of the culture into terms and building a massive, very, very successful business. So we get into this. I got a co-host for this one, Mr. Mike Cirelli from the Everyday Warrior and former SEAL. So we had him on. We do a little ice dipping, we do a little cold water immersion, and then we get on here and chop it up. So it's an engaging story. So I want you to get chilly and get ready for Mr. Wyatt Ewing. Well, guys, hey, thanks for coming. This is amazing.
That was the oddest.
Hey,
from California.
Hey. And then I used upspeak like, hey, so I'm here today. You haven't heard that upspeak deal. And I hadn't realized it until I went back to California to see my mom for my nephew's graduation. So we're like going out, and every time we were talking to anybody, every definitive statement they were making had this little upturn where it sounded like they were asking a question, to the point where I was like overly confused about it. Do you know what upspeak is?
I don't know what upspeak is, but let me ask you this. Do overly cheery people piss you off? Like, I'm just sort of level. When somebody's always like so optimistic, even in like the worst of times, you're like, bro, just like bring it down. It pisses me off.
Mm. I could see you're easily upset. What about you? Are you upset by cheery people or positive, upbeat, happy-go-lucky people?
I just live in the middle of nowhere, so I just try to keep my distance.
Is that by design?
Yes, 100%.
I think the older I get, the less I want to be around big crowds.
Yeah.
But we've talked about that plenty, about how men start to isolate.
Well, we were actually on a podcast talking about that a little bit yesterday, that you can kind of gauge when men stop evolving. It's usually where their haircut changes. So if you see a guy who's 50 and you see his haircut, if you go back and you look in the pictures, there's a point where he had that haircut and he's just rocked that same haircut. And that's like the end of neuroplasticity. You're basically crystallized with the haircut.
You're done.
Yeah, that's it. All right. So like, guys, what they'll do. And the girl that cuts my hair is hilarious, because I always ask her, and she's like, oh yeah, guys will bring me in pictures from like 30 years ago. I'll be like, this is my haircut. And so I started talking to her about like neuroplasticity and, you know, these key functions that people can do to, you know, get outside their comfort zone, which is a great lead in for today's podcast. But being able to do hard things and change your, you know, frequency and just different, you know, get yourself out of your comfort zone. You know, they go to the same places to eat. They have the same friends. They don't, you know, they wear the same shoes. They do all the same things. And that's like a dead day old sign of like, you know, if you're still wearing and driving the same car and doing the same things at 26 that you are at like 66, like, what have you effectively done over those 40 years? And I'm like, that's a great indicator for neuroplasticity. So we're always looking for that idea of like, can I continue to learn and be malleable and useful and add changes? And I think small little things like today, like the cold plunge, are incredible tools for that. I mean, being able to add that into somebody's life who's never done it, or isn't necessarily into fitness, and that's the gateway, I think is an incredible tool.
I'm a creature of habit, and I for sure hate decision fatigue. I'm making so many decisions during the day. I don't want to like think about what I'm going to wear, what I'm going to eat, what haircut I'm going to have. So I wear the same thing all the time, have the same haircut, drive the same route, because I'm making so many other decisions within the business and family that it's like those little things. I don't want to sit in my closet and be like, what looks good?
Black t-shirt.
Exactly. A good example of that is John Paul DeJorio,
yeah,
who owns Paul Mitchell and Patron.
Yeah.
And he has pretty much the same shirt, same pants in the closet, like 5-10 pairs of each of them, and he wears the same thing every day. It's one less thing to worry about.
Yeah.
And as you described the neuroplasticity, I'm like shrinking in my chair. Like you're basically describing me.
So one of you can do two things to beat it. You can brush your teeth with your left hand and pick a different, slightly different route every time you go home. Like when I go drive to go see my client, or you know, any of the stuff that I go do, I always kind of look and try to pick a slightly different route. Maybe I make a right turn here, maybe I do this, or maybe I go past, and I never go home the same way twice. And that was like a great indicator to just add a certain level of neuroplasticity, but also brushing your teeth with your other hand.
Well, it's the same thing you mentioned, like the restaurant. Like my wife always wants to try a new restaurant. I'm like, I want to go to Ranch 616 and I want the ribeye. That's it. She complains about it nonstop. You don't try new things. I'm like, no, because I know what I like.
Yeah. I have zero problem doing new things. Like, you know, changing haircut. I like to shop for my food. I like to cook. I like to make different things. So I don't suffer from decision fatigue, even though I feel like I'm making decisions all day. These are just like life decisions. And also I don't want to be like 70 years old where you're like, these kids. And you're like, you know, the old curmudgeon chasing people down the road because you're mad at skateboarders. Not that you fucking weirdos are going to be like that, but
probably already are.
What pisses you guys off in the middle of nowhere, Iowa?
Ohio.
Same fucking thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Ohio, Iowa.
Probably tractors on the road.
What part of Iowa are you in?
I'm in Amish.
Oh, I know. I'm just making a joke, dude.
Amish country. Yeah. It's awesome. We love it there.
There was I lived in Pennsylvania. I played for the Eagles. And there's a big Amish deal. And I was never really kind of exposed to the Amish Mennonite deal. And, you know, they have farmer markets and all that. And it's kind of the first time I was ever exposed to it. But like Amish furniture and like all that kind of like, you know, craft stuff they do is so incredible.
Yeah, it's
like wild. Those people are great.
Yeah, they are. They're awesome.
I like watched a whole show on this guy that hired these Amish people to come build him a house. And it was crazy. They like built the house in like 3 days. And it was all wood and they raised it and they came over. And I was like, these people are incredible. They use like 3 nails. It was impressive.
Damn.
Yeah. We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Are you a field or court sport athlete looking to dominate the leaderboard? Let me introduce you to Field Strong. Take your inner athlete to the next level by exposing yourself to the advanced training techniques that contributed to my 10 years in the NFL. Unlock pinnacle performance and level up your athletic potential today. Head to powerathletehq.com/Field Strong and claim your 7-day free trial. Now back to the show.
Well, dude, Wyatt, you've got an interesting story. One, as John did in the introduction, founder, CEO of Ice Barrel. But dude, your story, I find his story fascinating, especially in an age where taxpayers are going to pay for other people to go to college and not have to repay their loans. You didn't go to college, but let's get into your life story, born, raised, all the way up to Ice Barrel.
Okay. So born Colorado Springs, came from an interesting family with really interesting inspiration around me. My granddad was Colonel Jim Irwin. He was the 8th man on the moon, which was interesting. And that's kind of why we landed in Colorado. He was also a test pilot for the Air Force.
I absolutely know that name. I was just watching a few movies on the initial landings. That's insane.
Yeah, it was wild. It was a really interesting influence growing up with. And also like, I mean, at that time, astronauts were like heroes and were highly respected. And there was a lot of impetus on growing up and doing something meaningful in life. a lot of pressure, I think, to do something. And so anyhow, grew up in that area, Colorado Springs, just like real close to the Air Force Academy. 1999, it was a pivotal moment in my life, but my dad got in a really bad car accident. He was hit by a drunk driver and became 60% brain dead. And growing up became like, after that moment, like pretty survivalistic. I just became like an entrepreneur. Like, I don't like the term grinding hustler. It's like hustle culture. It's corny, but
I hate it. Yeah, you gotta just grind and you're like, shut up.
Yeah. It was more like, for me, it was more like survive. I entered the US workforce at 9 years old. And then my brother and I would go out to a ranch, work, go to school, go back to the ranch, give my mom the check at the end of the day.
Damn.
And, I learned really good character development, resiliency. It just got challenging. My dad had a really long recovery, wasn't working. We were in like pretty bad poverty. When I got into high school, there was a day where I just like loaded up my 1990 Honda Accord and lived out of that and left. And so got through high school, right out of high school, met the love of my life. I've been married for 10 years. Got married, I guess, like we officially got married at 20. But right out of high school, bought a house. And I just was like hitting the pavement and getting after life. But I had really bad like anxiety and depression from everything that I had gone through. And it was just like creeping up on me way too fast. Like professionally, I started out in high school like selling security systems door to door. And then from there, I was selling shoes. Then I got into selling higher end goods like art and sculptures and jewelry, high end home remodels. Then I found myself like I was passionate about aviation because of my granddad. I didn't want to fly airplanes. I didn't want to be a mechanic. So I figured I'd sell them. So I became an aircraft broker and I sold corporate jets. So Gulfstream G200s, G280s, Citation 10s, like that super mid-size market is where I specialized. Which that's an insane industry because it's not regulated, like the transactions, right? Because a lot of them are cross-border. So it's whoever has more money and a meaner attorney usually gets the deal done. So that coupled with the anxiety from just growing up in the environment I did, 2017, I was just like, I hit a freaking wall. I'm like a healthy, like 185, for the most part. And, back then I was like 140 pounds. Like I was like not in a good spot. And I walk into this gym to go work out. This guy tells me I look like shit. I thought that was super rude, but I was like, why would you do that? Why would you say that to me? And he was like, you should try cold showers. And, I was offended. I went home and I took a cold shower and it changed my life. That's how the company started.
And so you started doing research.
No. I didn't. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter how much you know. It matters how you feel. And I didn't really care if cold therapy was working or not. I felt better. I felt present in the moment. My attitude was better. I started showing up for myself better. So I just kept taking cold showers and then used the family ice bath or like bathtub as an ice bath. And then I realized like I hate laying down in an ice bath and I want to create a cold therapy product for the human experience. So I quit my job in aviation, which everyone thought that was stupid.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show.
And I...
Were you good at selling airplanes?
No, because I mean...
How many airplanes do you really sell?
You only have to sell one a year and you're fine.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what are those, the Citations and all those? I mean, what do they retail for?
I mean, it ranges anywhere. Like, one thing that's interesting is, like, these older airplanes, like a Falcon 90 from, like, the 1970s, you can buy that thing for, like, 30 grand, but you're going to pay $10,000 an hour to operate it, which is insane. And so, like, selling the jets I sold were between like $1 and $10 million. And then you would get your broker fee is anywhere between like 75 to 300K in commission. And so you just got to get one of those a year, too.
If why would it cost $10,000 an hour? Because of gas and the fuel and the maintenance fuel and like the pilot?
Correct. Yeah. You got to find a pilot that's brave enough to fly a plane from the 70s.
Nice.
It's called the military.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like this airframe is from Vietnam.
Jump on in.
Yep.
So occasionally on Facebook Marketplace, helicopters will pop up. And I'm not petrified of helicopters, but every person I know that's consistently flown helicopters has like harrowing stories. All the SEALs I know are petrified of helicopters because they just fall out of the sky. Like I've heard so many injuries of dudes getting out of helicopters, getting in, crashing, that like my desire to ever fly a helicopter. And then I was talking to a guy recently, CEO for this company who flies helicopters, and he was testing one, that a new one to buy. It fell 90 feet out of the air, landed on the ground, and like the blade almost like ripped his head off. And he was telling me the story, and I'm like, I don't know anybody that's told me a good story about flying in a helicopter.
There are certain activities we do as humans that like normal average humans just don't put a lot of thought around. Like when you're in Hawaii, let's go take a helicopter tour. The first thing I'm going to ask the pilot is like, so what's your background? Yeah. Like what's the maintenance on these things? But people just jump in those things all the time.
Yeah.
I was comfortable flying on helicopters when they were flown by the Army, and specifically the TF-160th guys. You had like nothing but trust for those guys. But those guys are the best in the world, and they did some amazing things with those helicopters. But I know we know people in Austin that have helicopters, and it's just like, I'm good, man.
Yeah, my neighbor right up the road had his own helicopter, and he basically poured a huge pad, like I have, but it's like six times bigger, and he made it an FFA landing zone, so he could land his helicopter, and he landed it on like a huge kind of like a dolly, and then he'd pull it into his building. No. There's absolutely no part of that. Like he was showing me like, you want to go for a ride? I'm like, no, not at all. Like there is zero. I don't know. I mean, planes are fine, but for some reason, helicopters. I wonder if there's a lot of helicopter brokers around.
I'm sure there are. Yeah. So when you say you step out of aviation sales, I mean, did you have a formulated plan?
I did. I've been very strategic from the beginning. With what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it. I mean, obviously there's surprises that come around every corner and you can have a plan and it never goes as planned. But I did know that cold therapy was going to take off. I didn't think it was going to be as fast as it did. I thought it was going to take more market development, but I quickly found a product market fit. So I started the company into 2017. 2018 was like, let's test the product in the market with the idea of like, an ice bath made for the human experience with this upright design to support the body's natural response in the cold. And people loved it. And I was at that point, I was like, okay, I got to scale this. So I'm like dumping all of our life savings into this, going completely broke, convincing my wife along the way, like, this is going to be something.
This is going to be big, baby. Just hold on. Yeah, exactly. Wait on until next year.
That's right.
Were you somewhat like, hey, we all lie to our wives. It's like the little white lies. Like, hey, this company's going to work out. But you're like, yeah, oh, shit, great. In the mind, you're like, I hope this works
out. I mean, we actually got in a fight in the beginning because like I didn't tell her the idea right away. And I was like telling my...
She's like, cold plunge? What are you, an idiot?
Yeah. but then I was like, I have an idea. We're going to turn this into business and it's going to be great. And so... what happened was 2019 rolls around. I'm like, I have everything I need, like in strategy to scale this company, turn it into an e-com D2C brand. And we just have to, we got to get out to Ohio where I can manufacture at scale. One thing that was important to me that I would not compromise on, made in America, made from sustainable materials. And I wanted to eliminate every externality in the business so that I controlled the fate of the company. I'm not going to be reliant on China and shipping containers. I'm not going to be reliant on 3PLs and other distribution centers. So I told her, we have to manufacture, we have to distribute, marketing in-house, accounting in-house. So that's how I built the company out that way. So I convinced her, she was 8.5 months pregnant. I'm like, let's move to Ohio, middle of nowhere.
Where were you living before?
Castle Rock, Colorado.
Okay.
which we love. We had a beautiful house right near the golf course. It was amazing. And yeah, then I'm like, let's go out to the middle of nowhere, Ohio. And she's 8.5 months pregnant. You're not supposed to even fly at that time. But like, she like put a big coat on in April, flew out. We already had one kid. And then I'm like, let's build this thing. Ran out of money, sold an airplane. It was insane.
So you basically had to get a PhD in manufacturing and marketing. And I mean, so what was the average day you were working in the initial?
I mean, totally like 16, 18 hour days. Because then I had to do like other work too, so I could keep feeding the family. So I would sell an airplane. I did consulting. It was nuts. I was just consulting with companies in all these different like fields. Just cause I was good at sales. Like I could sell stuff. So yeah, we get out there, ended up having to do a home birth because like we weren't established, a baby came early, like all of that. It was wild.
It's basically the worst possible scenario.
Can you get a little into like a compare and contrast of the technology piece? You know, like we got an awesome chance to try it out, but like, you know, I asked if it was injection molding. Yeah. And you said it was spun mold?
Rotationally molded. So a similar way that you would make a kayak or a cooler, like a Yeti cooler. But there's specific boundaries within rotational molding. So like straight wall, it's you put the product into the mold goes in the oven, then it goes in the cooling, you pull the part out. There's like certain rules around rotational molding, and everything that we've done, like we broke like so many different rules. And the reason being, like the first product was an actual barrel. If you look, there's no plastic, like a true plastic barrel ever made, because you're taking this like contoured shape of a barrel and you have to pull it out of a mold, and everything in rotational molding is straight walled. So even if you look at a kayak or like a like those are cylinders, right? There's no actual curvature to the plastic. It's just straight walled and it's rounded like a grain barrel, right? Versus an actual true barrel. So that was insane. Everyone told me you can't manufacture a product like this. And I was like, I can. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. Found a guy to make the mold with me. And then I worked with a contract manufacturer in the very beginning of like, hey, let's test this out and see if we can actually make this part. Then we could. Then I got into the facility I needed to actually like scale and grow. But like it was insane. Like it never should have been. And we went so broke doing it in the beginning. Like unbelievably broke. Like I remember my card was getting declined for a $17 meal at a Mexican restaurant. And I was trying to feed like me and my wife and kids, and my card was getting like declined for $17. Like it was awful.
Yeah, you were really at the very end. Did you look at all the other players in the market? And it feels like, at least from what we've been saying, everybody just keeps doing a version and a version of what everybody else is doing. Like, hey, let's do a bathtub. Let's use an aquarium chiller. And then all the different, deals. I remember a couple of years ago, I got reached out to by a company that does cold plungers, whatever. And I asked them, hey, can you send me your schematics? I'm kind of interested on how it's done. And so they were kind of pitched us on doing some stuff, and they sent me the schematic, and I was like, I could build this. I was like, you know, I weld and there's fittings. And they were using an aquarium chiller, and you go through it and you kind of can start piecing the technology together. And so that was an interesting piece of like, well, I mean, you know, where's the upsell? I mean, I guarantee people got to make a profit, but you know, if you're going to do this level of investment, you want something that's not only durable, especially in Texas. Like, you can't just have something that's going to go on the fritz, especially if it's outside, living outside. So that's kind of why I kind of pulled the reins on it. I was like, do you guarantee that this thing can live in 104 degree heat for 70 days in a row in direct sunshine? They were like, no. Like, I couldn't find anybody that was like, oh yeah, no, we'll try that.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it was the EPA that kind of like helped popularize cold therapy. People like don't know this, but what happened was all these aquarium chillers, and like these chillers are also used in hydroponics for engine cooling. Like these chillers are used in different verticals. They're all pretty janky at the end of the day. They're all coming out of Asia. And what happened was they use a gas called R410A. It's a refrigerant and it's extremely toxic. And so the EPA announces like 2020, hey, we're going to ban this. Well, China's sitting on the largest supply of R410A. So they ended up manufacturing like an insane amount of water chillers, dropping the price exponentially. And they're like, hey, we'll brand these. However, well, right around 2020 is when cold therapy started like popping off, and they made it so easy for all of these different brands to come in, slap a label, do an inflatable tub or like a fiberglass ceramic tub, and then like call it an ice bath. Well, the problem is like they threw together so many of these aquarium chillers that they're like white labeling as ice baths. The amount of broken chillers that exist in the US because of this is insane. So like EPA is trying to like stop this toxic like gas from getting to the landfills. All they did was like inflate the problem. And so no one could figure, and that was one of the reasons why I never came out with a chiller until this year. Because like nobody knew what refrigeration system to go to. I started building the chiller back in 2019, and I was like, we have to use like a non-toxic like refrigeration system that's not going to get banned in the future by the EPA. Because what happened was, now that the ban's getting enforced, all these cold therapy companies now are going out of business because there's the supply chain just dried right up. And so it just wasn't sustainable. But that was really like the rise of cold therapy.
When you came into the market in 2017, because Icebarrel, I don't want to say, you guys pretty much cornered the market as sort of one of the top names.
Yeah.
How many competitors were there?
There was only two, one in Australia, and then the other one was Cold Tubs, which they did commercial ice baths for like LeBron James.
Yeah.
So that was
sports teams, NFL.
Nobody was D2C. Nobody was going direct to consumer because all these cold therapy units had to get, you freight ship them, right? And so it's like LTL. That was a wild thing to work through. We're the second largest LTL shipper in the state of Ohio, which is nuts. And like we worked really hard to bring the prices down for LTL and really standardize like the delivery throughout the years. It was crazy. I used to ship an Icebarrel for $700. Like that's what it would cost me to ship it from Colorado to California. Now I can ship it there anywhere ranging from like 120 to like 100 and or up to like 220 usually.
Is that because of the volumes or just increasing in the market?
Well, LTL like has really evolved over the last 5 years. Like finally Amazon is now even looking into like, we just got accepted to like Amazon Prime LTL, which is crazy. And it also helped with like Uber Freight. And so like it's really evolved over the last 5 years, and in the rise of the D2C space, there's a lot of people out there making larger products that are requiring LTL shipping. So
it's
been really fascinating.
Wow. I mean, since COVID, everything's changed with this stuff.
Oh yeah.
I mean, when we started our food company 10 years ago, I mean, like trying to ship, we wanted to do frozen meals. And it was like next to impossible to be able to find a fulfillment house and this and the shipping and the shipping solutions now and the speed at which they can do things with fulfillments is amazing. Like in the last four years, it's just unreal.
Yeah.
COVID, I mean, for all its negatives, I mean, really forced it. You know, people were at home, they wanted the stuff and they had to figure out a way to get people stuff. And there was limited, you know, people to be able to drive and warehouses, and they just created the solutions. And Amazon had created such a network anyway. I mean, the place.
Yeah, they're a behemoth.
Oh my God.
It's wild.
Yeah. I mean, it's just in front, like when you came in, like the amount of little Amazon trucks that drive up and down, I'm like, it's.
You have a really big, huge pile of packages, by the way.
Oh, I do?
Yeah.
Yeah. So come to find out, my wife just orders things that like come on monthly ship. And then I'll be like, what are all these packages? And I like, they're all to her. And I'm like, I'm not opening any of these. I'm not getting rid of any of these boxes. But it's stupid stuff. It's like laundry detergent. And she sets it up for like auto ship. And it's dramatically cheaper than if we go to the store and get it.
There you go.
So I let her do that. I refuse to buy things on Amazon, Uber Eats, or anything delivered. I want to go pick stuff up myself, unless it's like something really small, like, I don't know, batteries or something that's easier for me just to buy. But
I wonder in our lifetimes, we're going to see like the Costcos of the world just go away.
Or just Costco goes online, where now all of a sudden they use Amazon.
Not Amazon. Yeah. Was there, so 2017, how many barrels did you, or what year did you sell the first barrel?
2018.
How many did you sell that year?
Gosh, it was probably around like 40 or 50, which was good, especially because I was originally making those out of white oak with a cooperage out of Napa Valley. They would send me the raw goods. I would finish it out in my garage And then I would
sell. So they were wood barrels.
Wood, white, yeah, white oak. But we were selling for $2,500 plus the $700 for shipping. Okay, so
did Rogue sell these? Were these on the Rogue site?
No, not these ones.
Okay,
no.
Yeah, because I remember they had like a barrel that they were selling, but it was a black barrel.
That was my barrel.
That was your barrel?
That was when I came out to Ohio and I actually started rotational molding the products.
Okay.
So the oak barrels were awful though, because I had to like do the finish work. It'd take me 18 hours to do one barrel. And I'm like in my garage, I'm not a freaking like tradesman carpenter type of thing. And I'm having to like sand and stain and seal and like drill holes in these things. It was an awful time in my life trying to like develop this product. I would just sit in the garage just thinking like, I should just set this whole thing on fire and just be done. But there was a lot of commitment and heart behind it.
Wow. How about 2019?
So 2019, we doubled the business and then it went from like, we finally got up to 100 barrels and then it was 1,000 barrels and then it was 5,000 barrels, then 10,000 barrels. And I think to date we're closing in on over 50,000 barrels sold.
A year all time.
All time.
That's insane. And you said you have a small team of,
I'm like, operational efficiencies are my strong suit. And so we have a really lean team. We have some full-time contractors. Then, like I said, there's the actual like manufacturing, that's piecemeal contract work. But the actual like core team is only 16 people.
I like small teams.
And again, yeah. We do like all the, that includes like the fulfillment in-house, like no 3PLs.
That's insane.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was there any moment early on where you're like, you seriously consider just shuttering? And
yeah, when his credit card got declined for $17, he's probably we can't go any farther. Yeah.
But there's also, did you tell your wife it got declined or did you watch it happen?
Yeah, no, like I ended up having, I had to go to my car and like I pulled, like it went through for like $15 and I had to like literally dig through my car to find change to like cover the rest of the meal. And then that was a dark time, but it was also that week where, this is crazy. So oak barrels, when you ferment alcohol in there, it neutralizes a toxin and then you can drink the alcohol. If you put water in a white oak barrel, it will develop a toxin that's like super poisonous for humans. And so there was a concern, like I had to seal the inside of these oak barrels because if like people just leave water, they go take an ice bath and actually accidentally drink and get sick. Like that's on me. So I had to like use this, it was a food grade, like refrigeration system epoxy. It was a two part epoxy that you would mix. And then I would brush it on the inside of the barrels. It took forever. Then it had to cure, right?
Yes.
So what happened was they sold me bad epoxy that had froze on their dock the night before. And I apply it to 17 ice barrels that were already sold. And I go out there the next day and they were still as wet as when I applied it. And I'm like, I'm out of money. Like, this is a bad thing. I was a mess. I like told my wife, it was like super flammable. And I don't know how I didn't get like cancer. Cause I'm like not wearing a respirator, like applying this stuff. And, I was like, I just light a match, throw it in there, let it and just collect the insurance. Like I was in a dark place. That was one of the worst days in the business. Cause I then had to go buy Xylene, which is like paint thinner on steroids. I bought 20 gallons of it, which people thought I was like going to make a bomb in my garage. And I just dumped in like 2 to 3 gallons per barrel. And then I would use rags and I wiped all of it out. It took me 2 weeks to get it all wiped out. And then I had to restart.
Wow.
It was insane.
He brought up a point. So he just didn't tell his wife how bad conditions were.
No, you know what?
Isn't that technically just, because we've all done the same thing.
Yeah,
technically you're like, lying?
No, everything's fine.
Just withholding the truth?
Yeah, everything's fine.
And she saw me in the garage.
Yeah, she probably just was like,
nothing's fucked here. We're good. We're just 2 weeks behind.
Yeah, no, this is exactly where I want to be. I got him now.
Yeah.
Wow, fuck, dude.
It was wild.
Well, like, everybody else was doing, you know, like a lay down tub, and you wanted to do a different style. Like, what was the inspiration for that?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's easy just to copy what everybody else has done. You know, like, you don't have to educate the market on why it's better. It's, everybody's selling like a bathtub. It's easier to sell. So why, where did the inspiration come for the sit up and be able to go that direction?
Yeah. So I was obviously like looking into like my body's response, because I had, like I said, I had really bad anxiety. I started cold therapy and the anxiety went away. And it was like this lifelong struggle of like that changed fast. And I realized that like, hey, my nervous system is like really messed up right now. And so how it started was I realized, okay, you have this parasympathetic nervous system and then the sympathetic nervous system. And I was just like observing myself in these two different states as I built up a contrast between them. So like when I would go into cold water, my body would go into sympathetic nervous system. When I would get out, I would go into this like rest and repair mode. And I noticed that when I would take ice baths, like I would, it was uncomfortable to lie down in this rested position, like you do when you're in rest and repair mode, while you're putting your body into the fight or flight response. And I then took a bunch of people up to this river in Colorado, North Platte River. Everybody got in and I noticed nobody tried to lay down. I was like, why do we take ice baths lying down? Like, even if you look at the NFL and like these major sport leagues, everyone's using like these stock tanks to lay down. Yeah. Like, it's so counterintuitive to nature. And then I was like observing actual animals. I'm like, every time an animal goes into the fight or flight response, unless you're a fainting goat, which is like a freeze response, you don't lie down. And I'm like, why are we doing this? So I was like, cold therapy needs to be built for the human experience. So I refused to cut corners and like use the bathtub styles, even though obviously like I could have gone to Alibaba.
Sure.
Right. But I was like, I'm not going to do that. That's not meaningful.
Damn.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been easier just to do what everybody else is doing. You didn't have to educate the market, but that's an interesting piece.
Yeah.
And then with the original, how, like, what was the capacity of the original barrel that you were putting out? Were they like big wine barrels, big whiskey barrels?
So when we went to rotational molding, I still used the same barrel type. And the reason being that idea was, okay, we're upright. Let's keep a small footprint so you can put this in your apartment complex, like right on the balcony, because you can't put a huge bathtub out there.
Sure.
So I wanted to make sure I could like get a lot of market share. So I wanted a small footprint, something that was lightweight. They were only 35 pounds, 105 gallons of water. You could put a pretty big person in there, especially with that true barrel shape. Yeah. When the hips bend and the knees, you get so much space in that middle. They call it the bulge of the barrel. So,
sure.
So we could crank those things out. My cycle times, I can't tell people my cycle times, but like essentially when we're manufacturing these, you could try and back into it, I guess, with the math, but like three shifts a day, every 26 minutes, that's three ice barrels are getting manufactured, 6 days a week. So
8 hours a day.
No, three shifts a day.
Oh, three shifts a day.
Three shifts a day.
Oh, so three 8 hour shifts.
Yeah, correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
God damn.
What's your backlog?
We've improved it a lot. It was like 8 weeks for a while. We're down to about 7 to 10 business days right now.
That's not bad.
No.
That's insane.
It's a lot of people doing ice plunges.
It really has.
It's
mainstream.
It was kind of interesting. Like, as we were sitting there talking today, I was thinking, he's like, you know, start with 2 minutes a day. And I'm like, all right, so maybe over a course of like 7 days, you're doing 14 minutes. Like, it feels like people are creating a lot of, I don't know, it's not complexity, but like that level of, you know, like, I mean, it's like for 2 minutes a day, could you do it easier? But so I'm not taking shots on the product at all or the people, but just the fact that like, if you're going to do it 2 minutes a day, like, could you just go buy ice the night before and throw it in and like, it'd be an easier deal. But what I'm amazed at is people are taking it so serious that they're buying chillers and this. I mean, they're like kidding up for this thing. It's like, you know, like a gym, we use our gym every single day and multiple people train there and people come and that. And like, so I don't mind investing into the equipment because I don't want shit to break. So I buy the nicest stuff I can. It's all Sornex. And, you know, like, I like investing in quality things because I don't want to have to rebuy stuff. And I surely don't want to have to call and tell you something breaks. So I think that that's what it is that people are like, hey, if I'm going to be into this, I want to have a good experience. I don't want it to break. I want it to be good. And I want it to look cool. I just don't want to have like some like ready, you know, I mean, we have horse troughs all over the property for horses. I could just go down to Tractor Supply and buy another aluminum horse trough and, you know, and this and like, but it feels like people are doing like people have created a, what's the word? Like a culture around it. It's interesting.
You look at it though. So I had the first version of Ice Barrel and it was great.
Not the oak
not
one.
With not the oak one.
The first spun.
And it was awesome. And this is a total first world complaint is that you would then have to go down to, you know, the convenience store, pick up six bags of ice and bring it back home, throw it into the water, let it cool to a certain rate. So the chillers are so awesome. And, you know, it's similar to what we were talking about mattresses and the cost. Like, the cost doesn't faze me. If it's very expensive for a mattress, but you know the mattress is good.
Yeah, you're sleeping
if you
after
do the
your
math,
life on it.
It's just like, at, by the end of the life cycle of the Ice Barrel 500 with chiller, it's like, you've got it down to like 5 cents an ice bath. Yeah, based off how many times you use it. Same with your bed. So it drives me crazy when people are so willing to spend $100,000 in some BMW that to get you from point A to point B. And it may provide some amount of pleasure, and that's great, to each of their own. But they're not willing to spend money
on
for
a bed?
Their own health.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, it's – yeah. No, dude, there are – like, I think there's certain people that they value certain things like in that deal. I mean, I've met people who are like, you know, why would you spend money? I mean, like we go buy a cow from a rancher that I know. It's all like 100% organic. The guy that's grass fed. I mean, like I've gone out and visited the ranch. I mean, like I know where the food's coming from and I get it from them and I know that, you know, so I like to control that stuff and people are like amazed at the level of, I guess you could say difficulty you go to do that. I just go to the store, just go to HEB in this. I'm like, well, but it tastes better. Well, I do, you know.
Yeah, and it's healthier.
Yeah, well, and I like knowing where my food comes from. So, I mean, that's a big piece for me is like, you know, pride of ownership, but also, you know, the quality of it. It's just one of those interesting things like the sauna culture and the cold tub deal like have just kind of exploded. Like, people are willing, like they have available money to spend and they're willing to spend it on it, which I think is so fascinating. Because like you said, you're like, I could just get a barrel and throw ice in it. But then you're like, now every time I got to go by, I got to swing by and do it. And then I got to fill it. And I got to, now it's cold all the time. So, I mean,
it's filtered. It's cold. It still amazes me that, and I think we're seeing the swing with the rise of the sauna and the cold water therapy. And is that we're getting away from that disease culture. As you said, to health culture.
Yeah.
I think still a overwhelming majority of Americans still value what they wear on their bodies and what they drive and other things that are just
I've told
tangentially
people
not important.
That the greatest flex isn't the Lambo you can't fit in or the clothes or the watch and all that stuff. I mean, I think I was telling you there was a guy named Adil Khan. He's a doc for this deal called Eterna, and he's like Tony Robbins' doctor, and he's a young dude, and he came on the podcast, but he does all this like really kind of like high end kind of life, like they do like a gene therapy to increase foliostatin, and they're doing some like really like ahead of the curve stuff, and so he has a big here like event here, and we go hear him speak, and then he had this big VIP party after we went to. It wasn't big, but there was a lot of people there, and so there's I don't know like. I forgot the number, but there's X amount of billionaires in the United States. A huge portion of them live in Austin. There was like 10 of these guys in this VIP thing I'm at. So I start rapping with this one dude who's like a hedge fund billionaire and just kind of like, he was like, so what'd you think of it? And I kind of went through it and he's like, you know, for people in my space, like before it was like, who had the nicest jet? Who had the nicest cars? And he went through all these things and he's like, you know what the new flex is? Muscles, being in shape.
O'Reilly. You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
O'Reilly.
He's like,
look at Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, look at Bezos, look at Zuckerberg, look at these guys. Like, you know, like you can have all these. And he's like, there was a deal there where it was like the jet, you get the interior, or you get the, you know, RM, what was it, like Richard Mille watch, what's one of one, or, you know, a car that nobody has. Everybody wants this. He's like, now? He's like, I drive a Tesla. I wear a, whatever the watch. He's like, I wear an Apple Watch. And the flex now is to be in shape. Everybody wants muscles. Everybody wants to, like, that's the new flex as a billionaire.
When you think of the hypocrisy behind being ultra wealthy, but fat and unhealthy, like, what's the purpose then?
That's the majority of those guys. I mean, like, I we've worked with people of that deal, and like, it's not something that they've put to the forefront, but it is now. I mean, you look at Bezos, I mean, he's jacked. Like I saw a picture recently of him on his boat with his shirt off, and the dude's pretty yoked. And then Zuckerberg's up there; his hair's a little long. He's got a gold chain on. He looks like he put on some muscle.
Not Elon.
Elon doesn't look good. He looks like do you remember in the Men in Black when the dude was wearing that like skin suit with the bug? That's like Elon. But it just was a funny thing, and just something I hadn't thought about. That now these guys they've owned everything, and the one thing you can't buy is you can't buy youth, and you can't buy health. You know, you got to go out and train for it. You got to go out and do it. And I break everything into passive versus active, right? Like, so when I work with, I have a few high net worth clients. I got one who's real high net worth that I do some consulting for. I break all of his modalities, the training, everything into, he has to give me one active and one passive a day. So passive would be obviously just sitting there like in a hyperbaric chamber or a light bed or something along those lines. Active is training or doing some form of aerobic work or a walk. So every day he's got to do an active and a passive. And then we just break the training into that. But, you know, there's the day that I can figure out how to exercise these guys without really exercising them, that's when I'll start printing. I mean, but they got to be able to do it. We got to go over there and get them ready and get them set and get them all lined out. And they got to do their food and make sure that you bring in guys like Parsley to do all their hormones and make sure everything's fine. And it's really like an interesting kind of team effect. I mean, if you have everything available to you, what do you select? And that's always the question whenever they go like, well, of all this stuff, I'm like, what moves the needle? Sleep moves the needle. Lifting weights moves the needle. Good diet. And you kind of go through these things. And if, you know, plunging 2 minutes a day or 3 minutes a day or 4 minutes a day in the course of 24 hours, if that moves the needle for the time invested, it's not like you got to get on a bike for 90 minutes a day or, you know what I'm saying? Like, it feels like a relatively small amount of commitment time for something that's going to result in a positive effect. That's an easy thing for me to sell. Being like, hey, it's 2 minutes a day. You've got to get in some cold water and then it's going to help you be a better person.
And if you can't find 2 minutes, that's a you problem. That is a you problem. That is time management problem.
Yeah.
See, that is the one good thing about money. If you had money of that level, I would love to get Jeff Bezos, his trainer, his doc, his hormone, you know, specialist on here to find out what he's doing, which turned you know, that major turnaround that we saw in him. That'd be an interesting podcast.
Well, you saw, what is it, Brecka, the guy that worked with Dana White?
Yeah.
Who's not a doctor. I didn't even know that. I thought he was a naturopath or a doctor. He has, like, no medical training. And he went in there and was like, his science is a little, if you talk to Parsley about it, his science is a little shaky. But, you know, he went in there and whatever he did, whether it was fasting, changes his diet, you know, added all these different levers. I don't know exactly what Dana White did. I'm sure it's all on the internet, but I know he got his hormones right. Probably got him on a little hormone replacement, kind of looked at his meals and did all the standard things. And then Dana White's in good shape. I mean, if Dana White trusts him, you know, Dana White's probably not a billionaire, but he's probably pretty damn close.
Yeah. I was going to say,
he's not hurting. I mean, I was listening to him an interview and he dropped something like, you know, 40 million in a casino one night or something crazy, you know?
So couldn't give me a million. I served my country.
Yeah, well, I served my country. Thank you for my service. Yeah.
And plus now California's going to give $150,000 to illegal immigrants to buy a house.
With minimum. Yeah, no, but you don't live in California anymore. You know, we've seen a lot of the research. You know, it's pretty prevalent out there. I mean, we see this back and forth where people said it's blunting muscle protein synthesis and not best for hypertrophy, but yet all the probably benefits outweigh. Is there anything out there that you've heard anecdotally? Like, I'm not asking you to make preposterous claims where all of a sudden people are going to come back into litigation. But I was on a call earlier and I said, hey, you know, we're doing a podcast and we're going to do some plunging with the guy from Ice Barrel. And my buddy's just got done with 30 rounds of chemo. And he's like, you know, the neuropathy in my hands and feet was a hell of a problem. And he started doing ice plunges and he actually got all the feeling in his hands and feet back. So he's like the multiple ice plunges a day actually fixed his neuropathy. So he's like, you know, like shot me that. So it's pretty interesting when you tell people these things, people sometimes have these anecdotal outcomes. I just wonder if you've heard any interesting anecdotal off the cuff or had any like anything like that. But I also don't want you to make any claims about this.
Yeah, sure. No, we see it often. I mean, we have a lot of top athletes, top performers that are using cold therapy. If you just look up like Eric Hinman, the guy's incredible and works out like a maniac and cold plunges like quickly after his workouts, and he's put on a tremendous amount of muscle. So it's nominal. I mean, the research has also shown us that like it's like minimal effect. It does have an effect if you take an ice bath immediately after a heavy lift and the goal is to put on muscle. It does have an effect in reducing that, but it's nominal. It's not like
100% blunting.
It's not like you just ruined your workout.
Or like you never went to the gym. Like, exactly. Oh, you haven't trained in 5 years because you did one cold plunge.
Exactly. Yeah. It's nominal. And we always tell people like, hey, if you've done like a high intensity workout and your goal is not to put on huge mass, like, take the ice bath right after the workout. You're going to be fine. If you are concerned about it, wait 4 to 6 hours after that, right? Well, and take an ice bath that evening.
Well, the same thing we do with aerobic work, like zone two recovery. It's either 4 hours before or 4 hours away from lifting weights.
Yeah.
And but yeah, we've had people too that didn't have the time to be able to do two workouts. So they'll do that and they'll jump on and get after it. And they get great effects as well.
Yeah.
So I always wonder if, you know, also you think about the adaptation phase. Maybe there's a point to which you become more cold adapted and it's not necessarily as big an issue. I mean, like we said, we've seen people cold plunge and all of a sudden they act like it's like a life-changing experience and they're hyperventilating and freaking out. And then you watch other people get in and they're like, oh, this isn't that big a deal. So maybe that's maybe that's the nervous system or maybe that's the effect of it.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're concerned about it, take a nice bath before your workout.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
Well, that was the Joe Rogan thing. Joe Rogan, first thing he does, he gets in that in the cold and it wakes him up and then he goes on with his day. I think he does some like body weight movements to try to warm himself up naturally instead of jumping in a hot shower.
So, and I didn't know Joe Rogan did that. If it's good enough for Joe Rogan, it's good enough for anyone.
Have you ever seen Toe Rogan?
No, is this
No, it's a spoof on Joe Rogan where they basically just Photoshop Joe Rogan's face on toes.
Checks out.
That's it is like.
And does it have little skits? He talks?
No, it's just pictures, but it's just funny. It's different toes where people have kind of put Rogan's face on a toe. And somebody sent it to me once and I went down the rabbit hole and laughed for like 10
probably
minutes.
Probably a million followers.
Yeah, it was stupid. But ever since then, I'm like, God damn, Toe Rogan.
It's like Nicolas Cage.
Yeah,
Nicolas
Cage. Yeah, they did. And there's this Nicolas Cage with a pickle. Yeah. He's so crazy. God damn it, he's a crazy son of a bitch, Nicolas Cage. Dude, he makes the like at least every so often, like I'll be on an airplane and like all of a sudden you'll scroll through the movies and you'll be like, is this a new Nicolas Cage movie? Instantly watch this.
And so they're all absolute B-rate films now.
It's garbage. Yeah, there was one I saw the other day that was like, it was called Jiu-Jitsu. And like, I don't know, he was a monk. Like I was watching it like 10 minutes in. I had no idea what I was watching. And was like, I got to turn this off.
My question is, who funds these projects?
Alibaba.
Alibaba.
I think it's the same guys that are doing the cold plunges or like cold plunge or the Nicolas Cage movie. Let's fund it.
So I want to do a rapid fire on sort of the enhancing benefits. And so I do it simply in the morning. I probably do ice baths.
Well, you said you do it like 12 times a day, don't you?
I don't do 12 times a day.
Is there like a too much? Like is Mike doing it too much every 30 minutes on the minute for like, you know, months? You know, trying to be like the David Goggins of ice plunging?
You got my idol. It's my idol.
And then from the plunge, you're just giving motivational statements that are just really just...
And I've got over 1,000 that I'm ready to launch on Instagram. Yeah.
It's not the cold that needs to run, but the cold running that needs to go to the place that's darkest in your loneliest hour. And you're like, what did that even mean?
I'm motivated.
Dude, whenever I hear those motivational quotes with like Goggins, I'm like, but yet people love him. And I think he's there's no way I would want to run through Death Valley and do, I mean, like.
He's a physical freak.
Yeah.
I think it's that we know the background.
Well,
from the SEAL community, but he's doing good work, man. Yeah. He's inspiring
people. Oh, yeah. I mean, the inspiration that he's doing for people to live a better life or just merely spoof him is hysterical. And I love it. And
then, the spoofs are the fat guys doing
yeah. Yeah. And people do it. But I know you spoofed me up there where I made the joke that, like, I'm really nervous about a society that the hardest thing you do is get in 2 minutes of cold water. But then again, maybe we have gone to such a place of comfort that, like, this is how people start doing stuff. Like the podcast I had yesterday, the guy was talking about, you know, like the greatest determining factor for organisms' success has to do with stress.
Adaptation to stress
and doing hard things and struggle. And, you know, one of the life lessons I gave my daughter actually today driving her to school was like, the earlier you get accustomed to doing hard things, the more successful you'll be later. My daughter, Jamie. So the brunette one.
No.
Yeah,
she just needed a little push, or was she complaining? What's going on?
No.
Is this bad parenting again?
No. So she thinks that the role of the father is to teach something every day. She's like, isn't that just dads do? They just tell people things? And I'm like, exactly, dad's job. So I tell her that my dad, all the lessons that I learned from my dad, that now that my dad isn't here anymore, is passed on. I only have those lessons from him. And so I am teaching her these lessons. And what I was talking to her about, and her question was like, Dad, I think it's really interesting that I'm in seventh grade and all the stuff that I start doing now compiles. And she didn't say the compilation, but the compilation of all this work is what allows you to be successful later in life. It feels like a lot of stress as a kid. And I told her, I'm like, yeah. But on top of it, what you have to learn is all of like the little things that give you the habits to be successful later in life, like getting up early, right? Brushing your teeth, making your bed, coming down, like doing your homework. Like all of this stuff is kind of, yeah, no problem. Just go out the door and make a run. All this stuff is null and void. Like, I mean, like nobody's ever going to remember what grade you got in seventh grade math. But the fact that you but the fact that you created a habit and an understanding of getting up in the morning, brushing my teeth, you know, eating, getting dressed, wearing clean clothes, going out the door, going to school, navigating it, getting a good grade, studying it, asking for help. I'm like, all of the system that you're learning is a system that you can port to anything. So what you're effectively learning is like a processing code, let's say.
A framework.
A
consistent framework
that you can apply later in life. And I told her, I said, at some point, like my brother called me 2 days ago. My nephew just graduated high school. He just went to college. So he's going to TCU up in Fort Worth.
He graduated from California, though.
Yeah. So
TCU,
TCU is now like what used to be like USC. So all the kids from California now all go to like TCU because it's like Texas and the stockyards. And I guess it's like a cool, you know, you're not going to go to USC and get shot. So all these kids from California go there to TCU. And I was like, how is it? And he's like, man, it's really weird to have him gone. He's been here 18 years and I saw him every day. And now all of a sudden, like the house is quiet and his room is the cleanest it's ever been. And he's like, it's the weirdest thing. And he's like, but he has to go and live his life. And he's like, you know, all the things that he learned for those 18 years, like once he goes out, all you have is those frameworks. You know, like you think in the military, you go through all this training and then they drop you in the middle of somewhere and you're like, God, I hope they train these guys enough to survive. And that's the same thing as a parent. Like you are preparing your child for not that moment, but the moment when you're not there to support them that they have to go make their own life decisions.
I've said this. One, I think, similar to leaders in an organization for the people below them, the young leaders coming up, as well as your kids, is you're trying to raise kind, empathetic, respectful human beings that contribute to society, are a net positive.
Yeah.
And more importantly, have the ability to critically think, fail, learn, and then pass those lessons on to the next generation. I mean, that's the purpose of human life as I see it. But, on a side note, tomorrow, Cal, UC Davis, nephews, suiting up.
Nice.
He's suiting up. Think he's going to get some play time. But
nice.
UC Davis versus Cal, man. That's your alma mater.
I know. It's hopefully Cal doesn't go in there and get smoked.
Well, Colorado almost got smoked by North Dakota State.
I know.
That was close.
Hmm. But you had a chance to hang out with my kids recently when we were at the PBR with the girls. They're in this interesting like 12, 13 year old kind of girl thing, which is kind of interesting. It's like this, this is kind of weird, but like they're not women, but they're not little kids. So they're in this kind of like tweener, like teenage kind of thing. And it's really interesting where they like want to be treated more like adults and women, but yet they still are working with like kid framework and kid operating system. So like my other daughter, Kelly, like she, I don't know what was going on today, but I was like, if you're not ready to go, sit here, relax a little bit, take a deep breath. And when you're ready, we'll go. And so I took her a little late to school. And instead of being like, get the fuck out of the house in this, like she was having like a little anxiety, a moment. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not going to like throw you to the wolves, but you have to go to school. Like, I'll take you a little late. Like, don't sweat it. We live right next door to the school. So it's kind of easy. But I also realized like Jamie, I'd be like, get in the fucking car. Whereas like my other daughter is a little bit, not nearly as, she's just not as, I don't know, easily, like she's just
rattled.
Yeah, it needs a little bit. But I think that just comes with age and maturity and all these other factors. But like I have to remember that you're preparing them for life, but not at the expense of like breaking all the eggs. So that's like an interesting piece. Whereas I think sometimes we were raised obviously in a little bit of a different environment.
More stern.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. There. I mean, like that would have never happened. Been like, get in the fucking car. Like you're late for the bus.
No,
like,
my wife and I think your daughters are freaking hilarious. Kelly is just.
Yeah. Kelly's
a personality. But what we found at,
Jamie's the dark haired one. She's kind of the super smart ass. So all of a sudden she's just landing blows in you for no reason. And you're like,
but their ability to critically think in the stories they were telling is that they weren't buying into sort of like the group think. And then Cash is just cool because he asks a million questions.
Yeah.
And he's in that phase. He's
a really good kid.
Yeah.
I'm so sad that he got saddled with this type one thing. Because it has forced him to have a level of like adult that no 5, 6, 7, 8 year old ever would need. Like the fact that he has to micromanage every single thing that puts in his mouth to the point where like he has to like look at it. And if he doesn't know what to do with it, like how many carbs are in this? Like, what's going to be the impact of my blood sugar? Do I have to call my mom or can I make this decision myself? Every single thing, like all day, he's monitoring this.
In a way, that's going to be an indirect blessing.
Yeah.
Like with that framework that you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
In our lifetime, I have no doubt that diabetes
we're going to cure it. And we talk about it all the time. Like the day that this thing goes away. You're going to be so much farther ahead than all these other kids for the fact that you've had this. But I mean, it kind of destroys a little bit of
your childhood.
The childhood aspect of it. And, you know, that's another interesting thing about parenting. And you got three kids too. You want them to have like a memorable, good childhood. But like there's a point, and I think this is so fascinating. I tell the kids this, you're going to have your whole life to be an adult. There's this small little window of being a kid. And when you get to an age, and we did it too, we were so quick to grow up. I mean, I was driving when I was 11 or 12. I mean, we're like for some reason. Oh yeah, my dad was an attorney, and we had
an attorney was allowing his son to drive at 11 or 12.
Oh yeah, yeah, 11. So we had this old Volkswagen Rabbit, and we used to wash the cars, and so we'd move them around, and then we just got to the point where we were driving and going to the store. So my brother Ed was 15, and I was like 12, and we would just go drive around, and if he drove there, I'd drive back. And we just drove everywhere to the point where my mom's like, hey, the neighbor said they saw you driving around. We're like, yeah, mom, you asked us to go to the store. But like, it's just kind of a different time. There was no cell phones. There was not like nobody was outing us to do these things. And it was a relatively safe place. But like we were racing so much. So I get with the kids constantly. Like, I know that there's this desire to grow up, but you have your whole life to grow up. So like, just slow down a little bit. Whereas I never heard that message growing up.
Man, I couldn't wait to get out of my household when I was 18.
Me too.
I said it was like growing up on the eastern side of the Berlin Wall, Stalingrad. But
I think for boys or maybe for kids, like that was good. I mean, I turned 18. I went to college. I never came home. Like I couldn't wait to leave. And, it works out the way it does. But maybe boys are different than girls. Who knows? I mean, you're going to find out. You got a little girl coming.
Mm.
I mean, you're rated. The baby's not even here. That means you got 18 years of this.
I forget some sleepless nights, man. I don't even know how you managed founding a business with little ones. I had a great friend who's been wildly successful, multimillionaire. He said, when you're starting a business, you can choose three things: the business, your family, and your health. Or he said you can only choose two of those.
Yeah.
And the business has already taken one, so what's the other one? Is it family? You're going to get out of shape or minimize your family and stay in shape?
Well, but, 2 minutes a day in the ice plunge. Yeah, I mean, you said you've seen it actually affect people's body composition in a positive way with fat loss.
I want to get into that. So ice baths were not readily available unless you're in the NFL and you've got this.
Or you go surfing in Southern California or something. Yeah.
And just stay in the water. And I remember we'd get out surfing in Santa Cruz and be like, hey, I need 30 minutes to warm back up. Yeah. But let's get into sort of the rapid fire of the benefits here. I know, we can talk about brown fat activation, weight loss, cardiovascular, joint health, managing inflammation, post-recovery, improved sleep. Just for the listeners, now that this has become more accessible, what are all the benefits of cold water therapy? And maybe is it not for everyone? Are there some safety parameters, some things that they need to understand before they go and make that purchase on Ice Barrel, which is www.icebarrel.com?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Appreciate that. So, yeah, absolutely. The short-term benefits of cold therapy is going to be an immediate reduction of pain and inflammation in the body. It's going to release beta endorphins in the brain, help improve energy levels, mood, help optimize your hormones. It's a total workout for your nervous system. You're going to get the improved circulation, right? You go in there, especially if you're pairing it with sauna too, you have that vasoconstriction, right? So it's like you go into the cold, your blood, your veins constrict, you go into the sauna, they're going to open up and expand, right? Back and forth. So improved circulation. You're going to reduce symptoms of anxiety, depression, and research is even showing that it can stave off cognitive decline over time. We have a really fascinating article about cold therapy's effects on dementia, which is super fascinating. So, additionally, can aid in weight loss through boosting the metabolism, increasing brown adipose tissue, which is that good brown fat that your body uses for energy. There's a myriad of health benefits.
With the improved sleep, because I know your protocol, just based off your schedule, is you do cold water therapy at night.
In the evening, yeah.
In the evening, and that's your schedule. But is there any data out there on that? If you do it 1 hour prior to sleep, it improves overall sleep.
So what's interesting is like through the night, your body's constantly trying to cool off. Mm-hmm. And so you're giving it this like jumpstart effect. So like I'll always end on cold and then finish up my evening routine, go climb into bed, and my body temperature is already much lower. So fall asleep faster, fall into a deeper sleep. Mm.
So with the protocols that you've seen, what do you think is the most beneficial? I mean, for you, it's at night, but I mean, a lot of people do it in the morning. Yeah. Mike's doing it periodically every 30 minutes through the day. I just wonder, of the protocols you've seen, is it really just getting it done in any way you can fit it in consistently is the key?
That's what I would lean towards because everybody is so different and the reason they're taking their ice bath is different. Some people are taking it just strictly for
a little closer to the mic.
Some people are taking it just strictly for reducing symptoms of anxiety, right? And depression. So they don't care if they're taking it after a workout or before a workout, they're just trying to get that ice bath in to help, mm-hmm. Calm the storm inside. And so it really just depends on what you're, the reasons you're practicing cold therapy. We have a really cool app. I'm going to plug the app real fast. Nice. And you can pick why you're practicing cold therapy. And then there's guided meditations based on your reason being. So if you're doing it for recovery or for improved sleep or resilience training, things like that, think guided meditations, but for your ice bath, they're really good.
So guided meditations while you're doing the ice bath?
Yeah, correct. Yep. Just guiding you through the ice bath, walking you through breathing.
Just what doing John's your, doing. Yeah. You're over there doing your, sun salutations every morning in the ice tub. It's good.
In terms of, and we talked about, you said sort of joint and inflammation. What's the data out there that, let's say consistent ice bath protocols throughout 30 days. Is it diminishes pain? Is it healing ligamentation? What
It's reducing inflammation in the body at mm-hmm. the end of the day. And obviously there's like the numbing effect as well. So reducing pain, inflammation.
What about blood pressure in circulation? Is there anything out there on that?
There's quite a bit of data out there on cold therapy, and there's amazing voices that talk about it, like Dr. Rhonda Patrick's, Dr. Andrew Huberman, Paul Check. I don't know if he's a doctor. He might be a doctor.
No, I don't think
Paul Check's a doctor. What about Icehoff?
Pass.
he does look like he's in good shape for his age, man. Icehoff.
Wim Hof.
Wim Hof. Thanks.
Well, I've never done.
Yeah, he's fucking nuts.
I've never done any of his stuff, but so I'm just purely speaking as like an outside. Like when I was watching them do all that, like the huffing and the breathing and what they call fire and ice, and they're trying to use all that to increase your core temperature. Looks like a lot of sympathetic nervous system type of attack, and I wonder if like everybody lives in this, you know, sympathetic nervous system where they're constantly in this fight or flight deal. And I kind of look at it like, can I relax myself in the cold more so than just trying to like, you know, build up that internal fire? So I don't know. I probably need to do a little more research on it, but just looking at it, I was like, man, I wouldn't want to huff and puff in that. But I mean, these guys are running around in Speedos in the snow, so they're doing something.
Here's, I think, the moral of the story is choose who you follow on social media, because everyone has a microphone. And just because they have a following does not mean that they have a great, let's say, subject matter expertise in that area. They're promoting themselves in whatever form. But are there any precautions or any individuals that you wouldn't recommend an ice bath to?
Yeah, for sure. Pregnant, breastfeeding, obviously. Also, I think it's important to mention, depending on where you are in your, as a woman, where she is in the cycle, like 2 to 3 days before the cycle starts, during the cycle, your body, a female's body is naturally trying to warm up. Doesn't make sense to try and take it the other direction. You're gonna start messing with hormones. So it's a good idea to do it during the two phases out of the four.
That makes sense. But I, you know, my wife's pregnant. I can't get her in the ice bath even before that. And she won't do the sauna. You want to know why she won't do the sauna? She fake tans.
Spray tan.
Spray tan. And I won't let her into the sauna because then it would be brown in the...
She does have a good spray tan. I think even when I met her, I even commented. I was like, man, that's a hell of a spray tan. And you were like, made a comment. I was like, it's like, because I come from Orange County, or I lived in Orange County, I don't see spray tans like that much out in here, but man, she's, yeah, that's a weird deal. I wouldn't want her in my sauna either with a spray tan.
No, you should see the sheets after a week.
Does it like
looks come like on? We murdered somebody in there. She's gonna kill me for saying that. She doesn't listen to my shit either.
Does she still spray tan even though she's pregos?
Yeah. Oh, there's nothing against it.
Oh, really? I figured that might be like a.
There are certain things she has. You can't do Botox. Can't do there's a few things you can't do. I think filler, things like that. But no, she's stuck with her protocol. She's been, my wife is a beast. She's 9 months. She just did a video where she was doing rows 145.
She was cheating the range of motion because her belly's big, but it's okay.
She was goblet squatting about 100 pounds. I mean, she gets a lot of hate, believe it or not. Yeah. Like, oh, you're not supposed to be doing that. And she's like, show me where it says you're not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah, no. I remember in those early CrossFit days, Annie Sakamoto was pregnant. She was doing like, you know, sets of 30 kipping pull-ups and like was just flying on the bar, and people were like over them, you know, upset about her. And she's like, the kids are fine. Everything's fine.
And I'm sure, so, you know, Kate had twins. There's no great pregnancy.
So what was wild about that, and I always tell people, or women, especially when they're pregnant, like, you will know your body. Like if it doesn't feel right, don't do something. And I remember we found out Kate was pregnant and she was lifting weights. And I remember she went to go do something and she's like, that feels real. Like that doesn't feel right. And she's like, I think I'm just going to walk. So she just walked and like kind of didn't, I mean, but then all of a sudden she was pregnant with twins and all of a sudden she was like immobile pretty quick to the point where I ended up getting those Normatec boots to try to pump swelling out of her legs and feet. Oh, her poor, I felt terrible for her. But I am. Women got the raw end of the deal. I tell the girls that I'm like, dude, you guys got the raw end of the deal. There's a lot of stuff you guys got going on.
I don't envy them whatsoever over these 9 months.
So that's what's even weirder. And I know on this podcast we're not supposed to talk about it, but that's even weirder when, like, with a lot of the
why aren't we supposed to talk about
transition stuff? I was just making a joke. But guys transitioning to women, I'm like, I mean, I could see it the other way. Women are like, I don't want to be a woman. I want to be a man. But I can't see it the other way. I'm like, I got daughters. There's no part of this that I would want.
It, just the strain on the body with what they do. Yeah. That's not easy. One last question, because John has a sauna. He just got one. I've got a sauna right next to my ice bath. What is the usual protocol you recommend? Or do you even mix the two?
I mix the two most nights and Sunday mornings. And it's usually 10 to 15 minutes in the sauna at like 180. I used to do like the 215, like super hot. And the older I get, just less interested in the extremes. And so I just go like 180 for 10 to 15 minutes. And then I hit the ice bath for 4 to 6 minutes.
And then do you get back in the sauna, or do you?
Yeah, I'll do that three times.
Mm. So 15 minutes, 4 to 6 minutes.
Yep.
And the reason you do 4 to 6 is because you can sustain it because your core temperature is so high.
Correct. Yeah. But I also do like that temperature at like 45 to 48 degrees.
And then you get back in for another 15?
Correct.
Holy. So that's a 1 hour protocol.
It's an hour. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I mean, what is it? Anything over like 174 is where they say you activate the heat shock protein.
So I've read from the studies I've read is 168.
Yeah. It's somewhere in there. Yeah. 168, 174. I got into a sauna once that was like 220. And like, you're like, oh, this isn't that bad. And then all of a sudden you get to the point where you're like, eyes get big and you're like, dude, I'm going to have to get out of here. I'm going to die.
Which it was just like 6 minutes in?
No, I think we made like 15.
That's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, that was that was really awful. But I didn't want to go back for multiple rounds. Like after I got out, I was just kind of done. Whereas I feel like if it's in like the 170s, 180s, you can do rounds. But in like that 220 stuff, like even when you get in the cold, you're like, I'm good.
The only way you can last is rub peppermint oil all over your body.
Or they have those sauna hats. Yeah, the sauna hats are good. They look like a kind of a funky condom looking thing.
And I still sit in on an ice pack when I'm in the sauna. So I'll have the gel packs. Mm. I'll sit on it just for whatever for swimmers I have left.
You mean for number two?
For number two. If she evokes that card. But I don't think it's going to happen. We'll see.
You think one and done, huh?
I think she will be. Because she's into working out. She's not vain. It's just, she's like, damn, dude, I want to get back in my form.
Yeah, or get back into shape.
Yeah. Where do you take Ice Barrel from here? I know you've crushed and sort of set the standard for direct-to-consumer. I mean, are you going to start working more heavily with like the CrossFits, the pro sports of the world? Where do you want to take the company?
Yeah, so right now a big focus is distribution. So we launched with Costco, Best Buy, Shields.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's really the goal right now is distribution. Then towards the end of 2025, international distribution as well. We want to manufacture in certain countries as well. And I mean, the whole mission and vision here is we see a future where the power of cold therapy enhances the potential of everybody everywhere. And so we want to get cold therapy into as many doors as possible. So that's where we're headed.
Damn. Elementary schools.
Yeah.
is there, I know you said it earlier, consult your doctor before, if you're under the age of 18, what is the youngest age you've seen where somebody's doing it consistently?
I have one of the ice barrels at my house and we keep it right around like 60 degrees. And my three kiddos love to play in the water. It's the shallow one, the ice barrel 300, and they'll jump in there. And then sometimes they'll get in the colder one and climb back into I keep the sauna on for them if they ever need to heat up. So young kiddos under 10, just like, it's good, right? They see their parents doing hard things, taking ice baths, sitting in the sauna, and then they start emulating that. That's such a healthy practice to take into life.
The behavioral modeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn, dude. Well, I'm excited to get my hands on this thing.
Yeah.
The chiller looks amazing.
And I like that it's got a filter in it. How often do you have to change the filter?
It just depends on use. There's a pre-filter at the bottom of the ice barrel. You're going to clean that one a little bit more. And then the filter on the back of the chiller, you're going to 3 to 4 months.
Okay.
It's not bad.
3 to 4 months.
Yeah. And okay, that's like personal.
Recyclable? Like, can I clean this one or do you have to do it once?
Nope. You can rinse it off, spray it, get it real clean though.
Okay.
Or you can throw a new one in.
Okay. And then there's one on the front side, I guess.
On the inside at the very bottom. So when you go to clean out your water, you can even just reach down and unscrew it, rinse it off.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's a major upgrade because what I have to do with my other one, not to throw the company under the bus, is I've got to change that once a month, or the water starts to turn like green.
The circulation is huge. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Do you have to throw any chlorine or anything in it?
Yeah, we make a water stabilizer made from silver copper ions. It's non-toxic. Now, the product can stand up to bromine, chlorine, really anything you throw in there. But we like the healthier non-toxic options. And so our water stabilizer does a tremendous job keeping everything clean.
So go to icebarrel.com to purchase that as well.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I'll start doing because I got the little rubber ducky.
Yeah.
You know, the thing I throw in. Chlorine.
Yeah, with the chlorine. Yeah. There's probably a better way to do that. And then if the water's moving and circulating, it's, still water ends up getting a weird fuzz on it. You don't want to do that. So, interesting.
I've had no sepsis or any
other
things yet.
Do people change the water pretty frequently or do they just keep a good pH on it and just let it roll?
Yeah, the latter. It's really easy to maintain the water, actually, if you're using the right additives, plus you're using the filtration.
Is that on your site? Is there education on the site?
100%. Yeah, okay, we break it all out.
Awesome. Well, I'll have to dig in on that and make sure my barrel is stayed up to standard.
I've got to assume, have you seen an uptick in the amount of like small gyms, CrossFit gyms, cross-function?
Huge.
It's almost like if a gym doesn't have one, people are like,
Yeah, everybody wants, as soon as you step into a gym, everyone's like, where's the sauna cold plunge? It's pretty crazy. Nice.
It's amazing how both the sauna and the cold water therapy have just come to the forefront, man. Yeah. I love it. It is a great end of the day activity too. That's when I do the sauna.
Sure.
And though my wife bitches because I'll disappear for 30 minutes. And that will change once the baby comes.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to figure that one out. Dude. Anything else you want to leave the audience with?
Yeah, just check. Here's the thing. Just get started. Start with a cold shower. Go to the family bathtub when you're ready to, upgrade. And check out our Instagram. Check out our face, our website, icebarrel.com. And you can see the community take ice baths. It's pretty incredible.
And you know what I love is, and this is, I'm pretty sure I checked out the website. You guys have like the A-Firm or a platform where people can.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. Super affordable financing options, interest-free, like all sorts of different types.
But that is making just, again, accessibility for a lot of people, just rather than dumping so much change for a chiller. Hey, if I can pay $100 per month over a course of time, that's been rave for sales. I can only imagine.
100%.
Do you know the percentage of people that do that over just pay at once?
Oh man, I'd have to check in on that. I know it's up there though.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot. It's like, I think close to 60%.
Wow.
Damn.
Dude, it's great. Who would have thought? Not me.
We got John in an ice barrel after that famous quote.
Well, I have zero problem taking ice plunges, but I also know that's not the hardest thing that I've done each day. What's amazing to you is the everyday warrior with your motivational quotes coming from 2 minutes of ice plunging.
And you did say a comment that sort of hurt my feelings because we're in that society about the hustle grinding. So we don't do that, but we're actually going to, for Sports Illustrated, we're going to create something called hustle porn.
Yeah. So Mike had never heard, he had never heard the term hustle porn.
I've never heard that.
You've never heard that either?
No.
So, you'll see those like different memes or like small clips where people are like, you just got to get up each day and grind. And, the darkest day is the one where, it's these like stupid motivational, let's call it hustle porn because and there's a pretty funny page. I think it's called Entrepreneur that does a spoof of it. And they like make it ridiculous and they're like, you just need to do.
So that's Gunny.
I don't think you guys are done.
No, we're not done.
We'll edit that out.
Fired.
I was like, oh, okay, I guess we're done.
We're going to have fun with this, though. The intro is going to be like hustle porn, and then we'll do whatever hustle porn.
And then it's going to be like cold plunge porn.
Yeah, we're going to have some of that.
Yeah.
It's amazing what human beings will consume.
I mean, social media is really showing us exactly kind of what people are into and what they like. I'm constantly amazed by what goes viral and what people do. But my head's a little blown out on this thing just for the fact that it's the units aren't cheap. I mean, but they're quality made. I mean, the investment, like, you know, like looking at like the, you know, direction, you know, the molding process and everything at the touch points. I'm like, man, this is a solid system. And for people to invest in a company to be able to go this far to create these systems in such a way for something that might be, you know, 2 to 4, 6 minutes a day. It's cool. I like that people are, I wish they took health and diet and training, everything else this seriously. And it's killer.
I think the pendulum is swinging back that way. We got so fascinated by fast food and everything else that, well, yeah, I still, there's so much crap out there. Like, have you seen all the Shilajit? Like people that are buying these quick things, like lose 20 pounds with this pill over 30 days. Like, if a pill is making you lose 15 pounds in 30 days, Ozempic.
Oh, it's cocaine. It's meth.
Yes. Have you had a moment to step back yet? Because I know you've been moving fast since 2017 to actually look back and be like, God damn, I actually just created this multi-million dollar company. I should actually be wildly proud of myself and my team.
I think I respect what we've built, and I feel a tremendous amount of like respect over it. But you know, the thing that's been interesting that I've been just talking to a couple of my mentors about, I don't feel anything like emotionally inside like I thought I would. I love the work that we're doing. I love that we're helping people and changing lives, but I don't know. I haven't had that moment yet. And I don't know if I ever will, where I'm like, I don't know, where it just like hits me. It hasn't hit me yet.
But are you one of those guys, those high performers, that you achieve something great and it just, you're like, okay, what's the next horizon?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, okay. And yeah. I mean, I would always rather like in the year reaching and have not achieved, but like I'm reaching for it, than like, oh, I got it. And then I'm ending the year and I'm like, oh, well, I was capable of more. I
guess yeah. I did, you know. We've found that with a lot of people that we've interviewed, is that, you know, they celebrate for about 1 minute. They dwell on their failures for about 5 minutes, and then they're just freaking moving on.
Yeah.
Which there's probably an unhealthy aspect to that.
Sure. Yeah.
Wildly unhealthy is that there's just nothing's ever good enough.
Yeah.
John, when are you going to get your power athlete sign fixed? This is just.
Jacob and I actually talked about this the other day, because the other one up at the gym did the exact same thing. So the skull went out on that one too. So I hit up the dude, and he used to be right off of like 183 and kind of Anderson Mill, kind of up near where Shanji is for his Jits. So I called the guy and I was like, hey, I got to bring the signs. He's like, ah, I moved to Hutto.
Done.
And I'm like, ah. So I looked up where Hutto is, because I didn't really know. It's pretty far. So it's like an hour. So it's not just like a 20-minute drive. I got to like pack them up, get them up there. And so the expedition to get to Hutto hasn't happened yet, but it bothers me too.
Okay.
That's why we ended up kind of taking, like, we had like a wide that we were using, and we stopped using it because of that thing fucking dipped out on us. And I was like, hey, can you come and pick this thing up? And the guy's like, nah, I can't. You're going to have to bring them back. I'm like, fuck.
Wait, just what? Was thinking this is a shady operation. I was like, what are you guys walking me into? You guys,
yeah, Cody's in here, like coming in, hitting the whiskey bottles, you know, picking up some bourbon and stuff.
Well, damn, this has been good.
Yeah, it's been fun, man. I'm excited. The technology's cool, man, and the story behind it's even better. You know, the fact that it's manufactured in North America, and it's
that's awesome.
It's a great success story, more so than just me trying to hack it together with a chiller from a, like, what is it, salt. You know, aquarium deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. No, it's cool.
Well, should we scope what we're doing before we exit here? I mean, hey, we're going to air this podcast.
Yep.
And for 30 days, we're going to have links for people to sign up to. One person's going to win an Ice Barrel 500.
Ooh.
And that's, they ain't cheap.
No.
And so we'll make sure that everyone has access. Follow the social media for the Everyday Warrior Nation. Follow it on SI. You'll know where to sign up, but one winner is going to win an Ice Barrel 500 and be set up to start their own cold water journey.
Awesome.
It's amazing.
Perfect.
Well, that's good.
Thanks Damn, for having me, guys.
Yeah, do you want me to end it? I mean,
it's your podcast.
Well, you just kind of took it over. I was kind of impressed.
That's what I do. I see weakness, I maneuver in.
This is how it begins. Well, thanks for tuning in. Another episode of Power Athlete Radio. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.